Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling open source software. It's really changed everything in tech, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Fundamentally.
For years, it's had this amazing reputation, you know, transparency, flexibility, all that community innovation.
It really has democratized things, developers everywhere contributing.
To stuff millions, maybe billions, rely on. Operating systems, websites, databases. It's everywhere.
Uh-huh.
But okay, let's unpack this because, well, it's not all sunshine and roses, is it?
Not entirely, no.
Those advantages are definitely real. But the last few years, they've kind of peeled back a layer, revealing a darker side. Some pretty unexpected dangers are popping up.
That's exactly right. And that's what we're here to dig into today. We're going to explore how various actors, hackers, criminal groups, even government intelligence agencies are actively using open source code.
Using it how?
Weaponizing it, really. Using it to get inside systems, to sabotage companies, launch major cyber attacks. We've looked at a lot of sources for this, detailed security reports, deep analyses of huge breaches.
Breaches that affected real people, millions of them.
Exactly, and countless organizations.
So the big question for you listening is this. How does something that's designed to be so open, so collaborative, how does that become this huge global cybersecurity weak spot? It feels backwards, you know?
It does feel counterintuitive.
Isn't the whole point of many eyes on the code supposed to make it safer?
That's the central paradox here, the very design that makes it so powerful.
So.
Well, that's also its core vulnerability.
How so?
Because anyone can see the code. Anyone can tweak it, distribute it. And while that's fantastic for innovation, it also kind of opens the door for malicious actors.
To sneak things in. Or just exploit what's already there.
Both. They can insert new vulnerabilities, sometimes very cleverly, or just find and exploit existing weaknesses. And these bad actors, it's a whole range. Cyber criminals, sure, but also state-sponsored groups, even sometimes insiders with a grudge.
And how does this bad code even get in there? It sounds like it could be pretty sneaky.
Oh, it often is. It's not always some obvious blatant attack. Sometimes it starts as code that looks totally harmless. Someone contributes it to a popular project.
Like they're helping out.
Exactly. And then that code gets bundled in, distributed to potentially millions of users around the world. Once it's part of widely used software, bang, the dominoes start to fall.
We've seen some massive examples of this.
Absolutely. Some very high profile ones. Think back to 2017, the Equifax data breach.
Huge. Affected almost everyone, it felt like.
Over 140 million Americans had their personal info exposed. And the cause, a vulnerability in Apache Struts.
Which is open source.
Yes, a widely used open source framework Equifax was using. And now here's the kicker.
What?
The vulnerability. It had actually been found and patched by the open source community already.
So Equifax just didn't update.
They failed to update their systems, left the door wide open. And the cost, not just the data, but $700 million in settlements, plus massive long-term damage to their reputation. Then you have SolarWinds. That was 2020.
Another big one. Really sophisticated, wasn't it?
Extremely. A supply chain attack. Russian hackers got into SolarWinds, slipped a backdoor into the updates for their Orion software.
And that software is used by a lot of important places.
Over 18,000 customers got the compromised update, including U.S. government agencies, major corporations. Now, Orion itself isn't strictly open source, but the attack highlighted something crucial.
What's that?
Just how fragile these software supply chains are. So many products, even proprietary ones like Orion, rely heavily on third-party bits and pieces.
And those often are open source.
Frequently, yes. So SolarWinds showed that one compromise upstream, open source or not, can just ripple outwards disastrously. You have to vet everything you depend on. And we absolutely cannot forget Log4j, December 2021.
Right, the logging thing. That seemed to be everywhere.
It was everywhere. A Java library used for logging application activity. Super common. Hackers found a way to execute remote code through it.
Meaning they could basically take over the server.
Pretty much. Run their own code, gain control. It hit major tech firms, government agencies. Criminals jumped on it instantly. Ransomware, data theft, building botnets. You name it.
Wow. It really does feel like a game of whack-a-mole, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You fix one thing and something else pops up.
It does. And the scary part is these aren't just stories from a few years ago. The threats are evolving fast.
Okay, so here's where it gets really interesting. What's been happening more recently, say, in the last year or two?
Well, things have definitely escalated in sophistication. Take the XE Utils backdoor discovered in 2024.
JD Utils, that's like a compression tool, on Linux.
Exactly. Very common. A highly sophisticated backdoor was found in versions 5.6.0 and 5.6.1. It allowed attackers to bypass SSH authentication, you know, the secure login, and get root access. Full control.
How did it get there?
That's the chilling part. It was detected in March 2024, but the person who put it there had been carefully building trust as a contributor for years.
Wow, a long con.
Precisely. It showed how the open source development process itself could be manipulated over time, really opened people's eyes. Then, March 2025, another supply chain attack hit a popular GitHub Action package.
GitHub Actions?
Yeah.
Those are used for automating software builds and stuff, right?
Yeah. TJ Actions change files, used by over 23,000 organizations. Unauthorized commits were made that pointed software tags to a malicious file.
What did it do?
It was designed to scrape server memory in those automated CI/CD pipelines and steal credentials, API keys, passwords, that kind of thing. And just before that, February 2025, attackers were uploading fake packages to PyPI.
The Python Package Index, where developers get libraries.
Yep. These packages pretended to be AI integrations using names like DeepSeek, but their real goal, stealing credentials and sensitive data from anyone who installed them.
So it's not just vulnerabilities in existing code, but actively malicious new code being disguised.
Absolutely, and the scale is just exploding. Sonatype reported, for Q2 2025, a 188% year-over-year jump in malicious packages found on NPM and PyPI.
188%?
Yeah. Over 16,000 malicious packages detected in just one quarter. The main goal seems to be data theft environment variables, CI/CD secrets, API keys. And notably, they linked over 100 packages directly to North Korea's Lazarus Group.
Lazarus Group. They're known state actors, right?
Yes, a well-known state-sponsored hacking group. We're also seeing attacks targeting AI itself, like AI model poisoning.
What's that?
Attackers embedding malicious code inside open source AI models, and many businesses adopting these models. Well, they often don't have good ways to check them first. They just download and run them.
Leaving themselves wide open.
Exactly. Now, on the flip side, there are efforts to fight back. Google's Big Sleep AI tool, for instance, autonomously found 20 security flaws in projects like FFmpeg and ImageMagick in June 2025. Humans verified them.
So AI finding flaws in open source.
Yeah, which is great, but it also just highlights how many flaws are still out there waiting to be found. And just recently, July 2025, three critical flaws were found in NVIDIA's Triton inference server.
NVIDIA, yeah. The AI chip giant.
The very same. Their enterprise AI tool, built on open source code, had flaws allowing remote code execution without authentication unless patched. Basically, attackers could take control without needing a password. So, what all these recent examples hammer home is that even well-run, popular open source projects are constantly being targeted. The attackers are getting smarter, the consequences are getting more severe. For everyone, individuals, companies, national security.
It's definitely clear this isn't just about random criminals looking for easy targets anymore, which brings us to maybe an even more worrying aspect, governments and intelligence agencies.
Right.
You mentioned state actors like Lazarus Group. It seems open source is being actively used for espionage, for sabotage by nations.
It absolutely is. State-sponsored groups find open source very attractive for several reasons.
Like what?
Well, first, the code is open. They can study it easily, look for weaknesses. Second, it's used everywhere, often in critical infrastructure. Compromise one piece, you might get access to thousands of targets.
And third,
maybe the most important part, you can potentially insert backdoors, hidden ways to get back in later that can stay undetected for a really long time. They blend in.
Can you give some examples of this state-level activity?
Sure. Go back to the Snowden leaks in 2013. Remember those?
Vaguely, yeah. The NSA stuff.
Right. Documents show the NSA had put secret backdoors into telecom infrastructure, T-Mobile, Verizon. But here's the twist. Reports indicated that Chinese hackers then found and used those same NSA backdoors to get sensitive data.
So a backdoor built by one government was used by another?
Allegedly, yes. It shows how these things can be double-edged swords, regardless of who builds them or why. Then, more recently, October 2024, the Salt Typhoon hack. A Chinese government group reportedly compromised wiretap systems at major U.S. telecoms, AT&T, Lumen, Verizon, accessing customer data. It really exposed how even legally required backdoors can become vulnerabilities.
Wiretap systems.
How about? Yeah. And another Chinese-backed group, Black Tech, was found modifying router firmware, the basic software on network routers, to get persistent access to networks. They targeted government, industry, tech, media, including places supporting the U.S. and Japanese militaries.
Okay, and you mentioned the XE Utils backdoor earlier?
Right, the Geotan backdoor. Given its sophistication, the years of social engineering involved, the stealth, researchers strongly suspect state involvement, possibly Russia's APT-29 group.
It takes resources to pull that off.
Significant resources and patience. And a 2025 report from Strider Technologies was pretty explicit. It found evidence of contributors linked to China, Russia, and North Korea covertly putting backdoors and exploits into open source software.
Any specific examples from that report?
They mentioned an AI tool, OpenVINO Genai, where over 20% of contributors had links raising national security flags, and a Python package called TreeLib, whose maintainer was apparently linked to Chinese state-backed entities. We also saw the 2023 attack on the U.S. State Department's Microsoft Exchange servers. Chinese state hackers exploited vulnerabilities, stole around 60,000 emails, classified as a supply chain attack because Exchange integrates many components.
So even huge organizations like Microsoft aren't immune.
No one is immune when the supply chain is targeted. Look at Iran's suspected Quampirs campaign back in 2020. They allegedly used software supply chain providers to deploy a remote access Trojan, basically spyware, targeting industrial control systems, especially in the energy sector, often exploiting default passwords.
Industrial controls, that's critical infrastructure.
Highly critical. And even North Korea, way back in 2013, hijacked the auto update feature of a file sharing service to push out malware. They used it to launch a massive DDoS hack, distributed denial of service to flood and take down South Korean government websites.
It's a pattern, men. Using trusted channels like updates or popular code to deliver attacks.
Exactly. And it hammers home a point the security world has made for years. It's basically impossible to create a secure backdoor that only the good guys can use.
Someone else will eventually find it or exploit it.
Almost inevitably. And when these backdoors are hidden deep inside widely used open source software, these state attacks can fly under the radar for months, even years, allowing massive spying, data theft, or setting the stage for sabotage.
So, okay, we've got criminals, we've got spies. What does all this actually mean for a typical business that's just trying to operate? Open source saves money on licenses, right? That's the appeal.
It does reduce upfront licensing costs, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But that's where the hidden costs come in. Driven by all these risks we've been talking about, it's definitely not a free lunch.
What kind of hidden costs are we talking about?
Well, first, the obvious security risks. Because open source projects don't always have dedicated round-the-clock support like commercial software, the burden often falls on the business using it.
Meaning they need their own experts.
Yes. They often need to invest heavily in their own security teams just to constantly audit the open source code they use, track vulnerabilities, apply patches. It requires significant in-house effort or expensive external help. Then there's the risk of operational downtime. When a vulnerability is exploited, like with SolarWinds or Log4j, the disruption can be massive. Systems go down, operations halt, costing potentially millions in lost revenue and recovery.
Right. And legal trouble too.
Definitely. Open source comes with licenses. Different projects have different rules about how you can use the code, especially if you modify it or bundle it into your own products. Getting that wrong can lead to lawsuits, fines, and serious reputational damage if you're found non-compliant.
That sounds complicated.
It can be. Plus, there's even a potential loss of competitive advantage. If your own secret sauce relies heavily on open source components, it might inadvertently make it easier for competitors to figure out how you do things.
And finally, just fixing things when they go wrong must cost a fortune.
Exactly, the cost of remediation. Cleaning up after a breach, plugging the hole, ensuring it doesn't happen again, that often requires bringing in expensive consultants or dedicating your best internal people for weeks or months. It adds up very quickly.
So, given all these risks and hidden costs,
yeah.
Are companies looking for alternatives? Is there a different way?
Some are, yes. They're exploring paths that prioritize control and theoretically reduce that reliance on external, community-maintained code. This often involves turning towards proprietary, closed-source solutions.
Like building everything themselves.
Essentially, yes. Companies like Suite Office Software represent this kind of counter-approach. Mm. Their philosophy is different.
How so?
They make a point of building their applications from scratch, using their own proprietary code. They deliberately avoid pulling in external open source components or third-party libraries.
Why do that? What's the perceived benefit?
The idea is that it minimizes the attack surface. If you don't use those widely available open source libraries, you're not vulnerable when flaws are found in them. You control your entire code base.
So if a vulnerability is found, they can fix it directly.
That's the theory. They maintain full control, enabling potentially quicker patching and response compared to waiting for a community fix or dealing with complex dependencies. It's about creating a more controlled, tightly managed security environment.
And this applies even to everyday tools, like web browsers.
It can, yes. Sweet, for example, has their NetSurfer browser. Now, it's built on the underlying Chromium framework, which itself has open source roots, it's important to note, but they layer their own original design philosophy on top.
Meaning what, in practice?
Their focus is explicitly security first, always. So they build in their own malware and phishing protection layers, integrate things like an ad blocker that they maintain and update.
And they handle the updates themselves.
Right. They emphasize continuous innovation, seamless performance, regular monthly updates directly from them, aiming for optimal performance and compatibility, particularly across Windows systems. The goal is control over the security posture.
Okay, so let's try to wrap this up. It feels like we've come a long way from that initial celebratory view of open source.
Definitely.
What started as this beacon of innovation, of collaboration. It's undeniable now that it has this darker, more complex side. It's become this kind of unguarded ecosystem, you know?
Oh.
Full of uncertainty, manipulation, potential exploitation.
That sums it up well. Its very openness, which we all thought was its greatest strength, has ironically become a really significant vulnerability.
Vulnerability being actively used.
Systematically weaponized by hackers, by criminals, and by intelligence agencies. The lack of central oversight sometimes, the fragmented accountability, the reliance on often volunteer-driven maintenance. It makes these platforms prime targets, perfect places to hide backdoors, conduct espionage, launch silent attacks that, as we've seen, can go undetected for ages.
So as this threat landscape just keeps getting more intense, businesses, governments, they really have to face a tough reality, don't they?
They do.
That relying solely, maybe blindly, on open source software isn't just a potential security risk anymore. It's arguably a liability.
And this whole situation really underscores a growing need, a need for solutions that are fortified, controlled, and importantly, verifiably secure, where accountability is clear.
So here's something for you, our listener, to think about. How does this deep dive into the complexities and, frankly, the dangers of open source software challenge your own assumptions, maybe about openness in other parts of your digital life? And what steps could you take, maybe should you take, to look closer at the hidden dependencies, the things buried inside the tools and platforms you use every single day, beyond just what they seem to do on the surface?